Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Normally you hear our theme music, but it's just not there. Where is it? Oh, there it is. And here today we have a special audience. We have a special guest in our studio. We have Dr. Kent Robert Shaw, and we have Dr. Toby Zausner. Toby Zausner, very, very interesting thing. Hey, do you ever wonder what it's like to get old? You know, those of us who have hit 50 and crossed over, we say, oh, it's coming to an end. Then you hit 60 and you go, oh, my gosh, some people say it's really coming to an end. And you become a little worried about, you know, retirement and ages a little later. But what really happens is you get sometimes hit, whacked in the head by illness. Our guest, Toby Zausner, is going to talk to us about what happens to people when they get hit with an illness and how you can transform illness into creativity. Now, also in the studio with us is Dr. Kent Robert Shaw, who's got a very particular interest in creativity itself and the mind of a creative being. Kent, welcome to the station. Say hello.
Always nice to be here. Thanks.
So, Kent, what's your interest in creativity?
Well, I think that creativity is one of the things about being human that makes us so happy to be alive, you know, in terms of trying to deal with people's depression, anxieties as a psychiatrist, to tap into creative juices inside people that helps them deal with life's difficulties and frustrations is one of the things I think is a wonderful aspect of being a therapist and trying to mobilize people's creative answers to problems and difficulties in their lives.
And Toby, you studied this. Let's see. I guess we all know how it fell upon you. Right. I mean, you obviously, if you wrote a book, you had to be somebody who once got sick and then unleashed your creativity. Is that true?
Absolutely. I had ovarian cancer 17 years ago. They thought I'd be dead in months. I had the worst kind of ovarian cancer. But instead of dying, my life changed. And that's possible. I started writing. I published this book, When Walls Become Doorways, and I have a new life. I actually see my life as beginning after having had cancer.
Well, you're an exception, though, because you were creative before you got cancer. So, you know, we can't say, cancer gave you more creativity. It may have not. You know, you may have discovered different paint. But we don't know because, you know, you were too sick to go to the regular store. But we could say about certain people who were not creative beforehand, where the creative process was so influenced by their illness. Let's talk about some of those. Who are the folks?
Well, I'm thinking of Henri Matisse, the famous French artist. He was sick as a child, and his parents told him to be a lawyer because he was too sick to take over the family business. When he was 21, he had a serious gastrointestinal upset, landed him in the hospital. It may have been appendicitis. He had a long recovery period. He was so bored. The man in the next hospital bed said, well, why don't you try chromos? These were an early paint by numbers. He had never done anything
Wait,
like this.
Wait, for people who don't know what an early paint by numbers
means that
chromos, we have to see people, we talk in codes because we assume everybody knows everything. Chromos are a form of painting, right?
Yes.
And they used to be given you what you would get. You'd get a painting and you'd get some picture. You get some colors, some inks.
Perfect.
And I remember I painted Jesus, right? That was a popular one. And then what else were the popular ones?
Landscapes were very big.
Landscapes are very big, right?
And each part of the landscape would be have a number, and you would take your number on the paint set and put that number color into the number on the painting. And it was transformational for him. He said before then, nothing mattered. After that, art mattered. And he started painting before he went back to the law, when he recovered. When he went back to the law office, he would paint in the morning, he'd paint at lunch, he'd paint in the evening. Finally got his courage up, and he asked his parents to let him go to Paris and study. His mother was all right with it, his father was furious, but they came around, and when he left on the train, he saw his father on the station waving his hand saying, you'll starve. And later on, when he was an older man, actually he had had five transforming illnesses, but cancer was a big one for him. He was 71. He had intestinal cancer, cancer of the duodenum. The operation went really badly. They thought he wouldn't last the night. But, you know, he lasted another 13 and a half years.
And he changed significantly.
His art changed completely.
His art changed completely because now he was more crippled. Totally. There were things he couldn't do. Like, he couldn't paint on ceilings. What did he do? He created paint by pole.
I was telling Armand before the program how Matisse had to stay in bed. He could only get up 1 to 2 hours a day on a good day. And so he started drawing on the wall. Then he took a fishing pole, bamboo fishing pole. He put a piece of charcoal at the end. He started drawing on the ceiling. Then he said, well, I want to work in color. And here, so in his wheelchair and in bed, he starts taking beautiful pieces of colored paper, cuts them out into these magnificent forms. And he had people put them on the wall for him or on canvas. These cutouts are among the greatest works of art he ever did, and from among the greatest works of art in the 20th century. And he did his series Jazz, and beautiful. He said, only what I created after the illness constitutes my real self. And he also said, don't give up on yourself. Even when the doctors give up on you, keep trying. Use your willpower and use your stubbornness.
Yeah, as we could see that people with their illness, it's very tempting perhaps to get very self-absorbed and to get stalled with illness. And certainly this story of Matisse really shows how people can get out of themselves and get out of being focused inward and use their illness or through their illness to become focused on something like art and creativities as a way of coping and convalescing through some of their illnesses.
Well, I guess some of the real truth is that, you know, even though it sounds like a cliche, the illness is an opportunity. And if we perceive it as an illness and we say, oh, I've got my sickness, I mean, the truth is that when you get there, if you see it as an opportunity, okay, I've got this opportunity now. Here I am. People who may have never been creative before they were sick suddenly get this chance. All right, you've got now, you've got like, even if you've got 5 years to live, even if they do say such a thing to you, you know, you could think of that famous quote, it's by Joseph Chilton Pierce said, you know, in order to become creative, you have to lose your fear of being wrong. Well, at some point, you can't be wrong anymore because what's going to happen to you? When you're young and you try to be creative, everybody asks, how are you going to turn that into a job? How are you going to make a living doing that? But when you get to that point where you say, okay, here I am and I'm in the middle of this, and you get these things come in your direction. The opportunities are amazing. Paint by numbers, you know. Do they still make paint by numbers?
I don't know. They may.
They should, you know.
People love them.
They really do. I mean, I remember seeing them framed. I remember in my family they would be framed. I mean, my mother made one. I made one. How could you go wrong? And then Matisse, we all want to know, started off as a paint-by-numbers guy.
Well, I think that aspect you were bringing up about the risk that people can take, and particularly how illness, I think, throws, you know, sort of the mundane wishes to be only be successful or have financial gain, and it frees you somewhat from those kinds of, you know, sort of weights on people's heads, maybe from their parents, maybe from society's pull, and sort of frees people up, I assume, to say, I want to do something that feels good for me, something, and I'm going to take risks into areas which I'm not sure I'm going to be successful with, but it's a time for me to take risks like that. And if it turns out horribly, so be it, but I'm no longer concerned so much, or maybe so concerned what other people think about me anymore.
That's absolutely right. I'm thinking of Elizabeth Murray, who just had a beautiful show at the Museum of Modern Art, only the fourth woman in history to have that honor. She had lung cancer that had metastasized to her brain. She had brain surgery, came home. After she was recovering, she started painting again. She said, after brain surgery, I couldn't remember the color of the paint that I had just put down, and she had confusion because of this. She said, I took whatever color was close to me, and she said, I'll figure it out later. She does big paintings, 9 feet high. She works on a rolling platform with 3 steps up. She had trouble getting up on the platform because of that, but she did all of this. And, you know, she painted one of the most beautiful paintings of her life during that period, The Sun and the Moon. Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous. And it's also funny. She has pictures of herself as a patient in there. She shows her operation with the stitches. And so it's not only beautiful, it has a sense of humor.
My guest is Toby Zausner, Dr. Toby Zausner, who wrote When Walls Become Doorways, Creativity and the Transforming Illness. And we're talking about a transformation that comes about by suddenly getting bad news. You know, you get the bad news, and it is bad news when a doctor says, you know, you bit the big one. You know, you have a thing here you're going to have to deal with. There's a natural response, which is to get depressed. Now, that would make sense because your body prepares you and your mind prepares you. It takes on this poor news and it says, okay, we're going to get you ready to die. And what it does is it depresses, it drops the metabolism, it releases enough of the stuff so that you could just feel like not moving. People tend to be lethargic. Now, if you've received serious medical news and there's a friend or a doctor or somebody around who is close to you, what can they do? And what they could do is introduce you and invite you into a creative world. The many ways that a person can become creative are interesting. Because remember, you're usually dealing with people who are depressed. How do you get a depressed person to become creative? What do you do? How do you do it? You know, it's not like you just bring them a paint set and say, okay, now here you are, paint. What do you do?
Well, one of the ways you could do that is bring them some art supplies. Even a person who's an artist can get depressed when they're sick. Vanessa Bell, who is the older sister of Virginia Woolf, the writer, she had measles as an adult, and that's a serious illness. But her friend Roger Fry brought her colored papers to the hospital, and she started tearing pieces of paper out and making collages. After she got better from the measles, those collages influenced her work, and she turned into a modern artist.
Yeah, I think depression implies that you're feeling hopeless, mm-hmm. and you're feeling helpless. And that's the dark place that I think we always want to keep people from going with any kind of trauma, medical being just one, where they feel there's no hope for their future and nothing that they can do will help their situation. So hopeless and helpless is all about depression. Whereas we would say that what people should do is connect with their feelings about having an illness and feelings of sad, feeling of anxiety, feelings of anger about why did this happen to me. These are all appropriate to sort of talk to people and to allow yourself to have all those emotions. Sadness, to my thinking, is not depression. In fact, if you can vent your sadness and connect with it, you can somewhat get it out of you and then free you up once the sadness is somewhat out to then try to move forward and try to move forward creatively. And a creative artistic act would be one way to sort of get yourself less so self-absorbed with your illness and get yourself in a more positive place.
Oh, I agree totally. And we can see this in the life of Edvard Munch, the famous Norwegian artist.
The Scream.
The Scream, you know it. We all know that. Well, he wasn't even an artist before. He was a child. He was sick with tuberculosis. His mother had died from it. His sister had died from it. And the aunt came and took over the family. You know, she helped raise the remaining children. And she saw he was depressed. She knew he had been sick. And she said, "Fear loses its hold over you if it's expressed in words or images." And he started painting and he started writing. And this changed his entire life, and he became an artist. Mm-hmm. And he also wrote. People don't know, but Edvard Munch was also a writer.
I can envision a scenario where somebody comes in who's deeply depressed and, you know, and depressed over an illness. And I, as an artist, an art therapist, would say to them, "So paint your sadness. What color would it be?" And they would say, "Oh, it's that light blue color." Okay, take that blue and feel it as you put it on your canvas. Now you can see somebody who is feeling depressed and barely moving a brush, and you help them make a smear on a canvas or on a piece of paper that's the color blue and say, "Well, that's your sadness." And if the person's crying, you could say you could add a tear to it. Don't be afraid to add your tears to it. And what does your sadness do? What else does it want to do? And the person says, well, it also makes me angry. What color represents angry? Red. All right, take that red and make a relationship between the sadness and the blue color sadness and the anger of your red. And now the person has red and blue on the canvas. And now you tell them to work with each color and each feeling. Now, as you're doing that, that person is creating something in front of them. And I guess you just got to hold them back from taking black and smearing it over everything, which I imagine they may want to do. Mm-hmm. You may have to hold that back a little, but a compassionate art therapist or a therapist who can understand this can work with a person and truly motivate them through the painting itself. Now, you do that, don't you, with people? Don't you work with art and psychology as well when you're working with helping people who are sick?
I actually do guided meditation and a Jungian type of active imagination. But I agree with you that art therapists are enormously, enormously helpful. I'll be teaching at Long Island University as a thesis advisor in art therapy this fall. It's a wonderful modality. But also what you're saying, Armand, is when you paint this blue or the red on the paper, it's outside of you. What it's like, it partakes of the naming process. It ceases to be some unknown thing. You've named it. You control it. You have the power over something. Also, on the paper, it's smaller than you are. Often when emotions are inside us, we feel that they overwhelm us. They're much bigger than we are. That's why getting things out, getting them on paper, they're just not that big. And you can rip up that piece of paper and you can throw it away.
I think it gets to a term that's important in your book about mastery, right, is to get a sense of mastery over your life with creativity. Tell us about that a little bit.
Exactly. When we're sick, we think that life has mastery over us. We feel we've lost our power. You know, all of our personal power is gone. But if you start getting the illness outside you in your art and also start seeing it as an adversary, artists often see the illness as something outside themselves that they're fighting. You know, they're in a sword play against this illness. And when you have it as an adversary and you have it outside yourself, it's conquerable.
Mm-hmm. It's like your demons or something.
That's right.
It's outside. Another aspect that I got from your book is how people, children as well as adults, use this creative process to sort of make an artificial reality. I'm always thinking about how people need computers and internet games and interactive things. But it seems like creative people and creative geniuses throughout history have always been able to tap into their own – between their ears to get an artificial reality as a way of recreating the world around them to their liking.
Exactly. But the thing is, we all have this reality within us. We don't realize we're like icebergs. We just have the tiniest tip of ourselves outside the water, and this enormous, enormous aspect of ourselves is underneath. That aspect is largely unconscious, but the creative process taps directly into the greater aspect of ourselves, and that's where we can get our strength.
It's kind of fascinating that now, during an age where there's a computer available to assist us in creativity, in computer art, in photography, right, which is another thing that people could do now with digital photography and load it and play with it all they want. Almost anything that could be done, but now we didn't even address yet writing. Writing and poetry has become easy. Easy. You could type on your computer. You could change on your computer. You can work on the computer. And everybody can become a writer because you are a writer, because you just write. And then to write it, and even if you're using somebody else to help organize the thought, to help you out and say, what would make this better poetry? What words would I use? It's really a beautiful process. I think at this time, when you become creative, it's a good thing not to be totally alone, but to have somebody who teaches you at the beginning. You know, teaches you. It's like if you give somebody a cello, and you say, okay, now here's your opportunity to play cello. They need a teacher. And I think one of the ways of activating the creative mind when a person is ill is to give them somebody who could help them with the technical aspect of it, like technical aspect of the computer, technical aspect of writing, technical aspect of painting, and so on and so forth. And I think those people are very available. And understanding, you know, with computers, for example, whenever a computer technician is helping somebody who is new to computers, They're like teaching babies. They understand. You do not understand what this is about. And the way that they teach people about computers is with such tenderness. You know, I mean, you know, most people, I mean, I wonder how they feel about the lack of knowledge that people have, what they really feel. But I know they're so tolerant. And it's easy to get. It's easy to reach. It's easy to realize. So we have a way of getting it. Now, that therefore means that one of the things you could do for somebody is you could teach them something about one of the creative arts, and you could become one of those teachers. If you have a specialty, you can, if you find someone you know who's ill. I had someone recently who was very sick. I brought him a roll-up piano. This is a piano that rolls up. Have you ever seen those, Kent?
Oh, yeah, they're very cool.
It's an amazing
nice sound
thing,
too.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Nice sound. It rolls up. It's a digital thing. It rolls up, and it couldn't be bigger than a loaf of bread, you know? And you take this, and they could lay it down anywhere and play it anywhere. And he was having such fun with it, but he got frustrated because at the beginning he didn't know what to do, you see? But with a few lessons from a friend, that became something he could really develop and play with. Oh, I could play a song. A nice piece of achievement. So piano, I think, would be piano and music and playing instruments. Drumming would be all possible ways for people to go.
A little off the topic of how illness affects it, but creativity in general is something Armand and myself have talked a bit about with jazz musicians, and we're very happy to have an artist, a visual artist on the show. It seems like one of the things about true successful artists is that they have this ability to have these paradoxical parts of their personality somehow in harmony. I like to think of yin and yang. And one aspect that I'm thinking about is the kind of discipline and hard work that goes into learning how to play an instrument, how to draw well, how to do, you know, sort of athletics well. It certainly takes a certain amount of compulsivity and a certain amount of perspiration and work, which, you know, would think would be a compulsive part of our personality. And yet, when you do that, and obviously learning computer skills, but then to have that linked with a very playful, sort of zany, sort of spontaneous part of your personality that, as we said before, wants to take risks, wants to explore, wants to go into fantasy. So that ability, whether it's a dancer or an artist or a musician, to have this one part of them that's able to be so hardworking and compulsive and yet have that in balance with a playful side of their personality is very exciting.
Oh, I think so too. And I think also creativity is like a vacation. Mm-hmm. Whenever you do anything creative, if you make music or you make art or you write poetry, for that moment, you're not where you were. It's a really inexpensive, delightful way to get away. Yeah. And we're all creative. When everybody dreams, the unconscious, to me, is the greatest poet. All our dreams are in metaphors. So we all have the capacity to be creative. And we can translate this into music, into art, into dance. You never know what you have until you try.
Which brings us to another issue, which is instead of learning to become creative when you get sick, it may not be a bad idea to unleash some skills as you get older. You know what I mean? You know you're going to get hit with something. So like if let's say that you're somebody who's used to doing a lot of physical skills, learn an alternative to that. Learn something else now. That now, not that it's going to necessarily put off the illness, which it might, but to have an area that you could move towards when you have more time, when you're not working a full job, to have an area that you could be there. I think the difference between people who retire successfully and people who don't retire is what they retire to. The people who retire to nothing, they get ready to die. The people who retire to doing something that they've always wanted to have the time to do, right? Those are the people who I find to be the most successful retirees, especially if you could turn your hobby into some kind of a minor profession. Let's talk about knitting. I want to talk about knitting because I think knitting is an important skill.
Knitting is great. The fabric artist Phyllis Tycho knits, and she has Sjogren's syndrome, which is a very severe arthritic type of – it's an autoimmune disease, and she has terrible pains all throughout her body. She said, but when I knit, I don't feel them as much. She says, it's not that I don't have the pain, but it's further away. She said, going to the movies or reading – doesn't do it for me the way knitting does. Somehow the creative process blocks it. And what she is in a state of flow. And Csikszentmihalyi, the psychologist, speaks about flow in creativity as a time where you're very absorbed in what you're doing. You know, outside distractions are minimal, and that makes it pain is minimized as well. The Italian artist Parmigiano was in such a state of flow in the 16th century that he didn't even realize the sack of Rome was going out outside his windows. Mm-hmm. He only knew that the city was sieged when the German soldiers came into his house. And they thought his art was so beautiful, they didn't hurt him. They just took a few watercolors and left.
You know, our last interview with a jazz musician, Sonny Fortune, he talked about how he would be playing and be in the flow of improvising. And he would think 20, 25 minutes had gone by, and he would see that an hour and a half had gone by. And obviously, when you're in a creative process, you're in a place where all your mind is focused in on the creative act and this fantasy world that you're creating as a way to express emotions, as a way to be playful and the like. And obviously you're in the moment at that point and at that time. And being in the moment in terms of creative process also seems to help people with anxiety and fear, a very dark place that you can go to with illness. And so flow and being in a creative moment also seems to help people, I think, with their fears and anxieties about what's going to happen to their illness, and very healing in that regard.
My guest is Dr. Kent Robert Shaw and Toby Zausner, who wrote When Walls Become Doorways. Toby, you were going to say?
Oh, yes. I completely agree with Kent. And when you do something creative, and you were speaking about knitting before, your mind is on the knitting. Our mind can't think of two things at once, generally. So if you're thinking about your knitting, you're not thinking about your anxieties. You're not being overwhelmed with them. You're projected outward onto what you're doing. And you know, you end up with something beautiful. And also, knitting is now an accepted form of fine art. There have been knitted sculptures in the Museum of Modern Art. Beautiful knitted works. And then think of how happy people are when you give them things you've knitted, mm-hmm. because it's an act of love on your part.
One other point I want to make about it as well. So as well as being able to develop your own creativity and to develop it before you get sick, when you get sick, is also another thing you could do, which is to, if you know somebody who has gotten sick who is creative, encourage them to teach you their creativity. Because even a creative person who feels like their life is over and they have nothing to give, if you ask them to help you to be creative, they will pull on their creativity in a different way because they'll be using it to teach you, and it'll make them feel like they have some kind of meaning in life. The other thing that we can very often do is you can get someone who is creative to volunteer time, even if they have a fatal illness. They could go to volunteer their time somewhere, even if they're in a hospital, to volunteer the time, showing, helping people, you know, because if you could move your energy outward, you know, it becomes a different way. And for some people, it helps them live longer rather than giving up and dying. And for other people, it just helps them enjoy those years a lot better. I remember Marion Parker once said, be kind, because everyone you meet is fighting a battle. Everyone you meet is fighting a battle. A good reason to be kind. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking with a lovely person, Dr. Toby Zausner, Zausner, who wrote the book When Walls Become Doorways, Creativity and the Transforming Illness, and Dr. Kent Robert Shaw here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. It is just about 1:30 here, just about a few seconds shy. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, well, this is a song of inspiration. I love it. And when we come back, we'll continue with this discussion.
Don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start. Make it better. Hey Jude, Don't be afraid. You were made to go out and get her. The minute you let her under your skin, then you begin to make it better.
That was Hey Jude by Bob Dylan. I just wanted to see if you were listening. That's the Beatles from the new Love album, redigitized, remastered. Pretty fantastic stuff. This is Armand DeMille here with The Positive Mind on WBAI 99.5 FM. I am sitting here with Toby Zausner, Dr. Toby Zausner, and Dr. Kent Robert Shore. What are we talking about? We're talking about creativity and transformative illness. And it's what happens when you suddenly find out you get some bad news. Bad news could be anything. You could lose a job. You know, you could get sick. You could have any number of things happen to you. Someone could die who's next to you. And Toby says, this is an opportunity to grab that creativity that you've always had and to unleash it. It's always amazing to me, Toby, that whenever I interview somebody, sometimes we have a little questionnaire we ask. Sometimes I see a completely stunted creativity. Now, when creativity is completely stunted, that means on our test, when somebody ranks creativity as a 1 on a scale of 1 to 4, with 4 being the most like me, you wonder how a person puts one, I am an uncreative person, and many people feel that they are. So it part of what I think of right there is that, okay, somewhere in early childhood, there was no reward for being creative, you know, so it got stunted. It had to be pushed down. So now is an opportunity. It's laying there. It's sitting in wait. You know, it's sitting there. It's just saying, okay, want to come up? I'm ready to go. You know, and your illness could be one way, or your misfortune may be one opportunity, which is why you call it a doorway rather than a wall.
That's right. We're often, illness pushes you back on yourself, and it often the things that you're used to doing in life, you can't do them anymore. You know, you're not able to do things. Like Frida Kahlo had a terrible traffic accident. She was in a little bus that was hit by a trolley, broke her spine, her leg, her foot, and she had to lay in bed. So she started painting. She was a pre-med major before she had the accident. And she said, without realizing it, I began to paint. Well, she lay in bed and started making the paintings that would make her famous. But what you were saying before, Amand, was very interesting. You said, why don't you get up a skill so later on you can have it? Well, people don't realize that Frida Kahlo had polio. And when she had polio, she started to paint and take art lessons. And her father was very encouraging. Then when she had the severe accident, he gave her his oil paints. And her mother had a carpenter build an easel that could be used by somebody lying down. So they were very encouraging. And that's what you were saying about giving a gift to somebody who is sick. And, of course, this is most very important with young people, but it's true with anybody at any age. And the world is that much better because Frida Kahlo was given those oil paints and that easel. So I would just like to say, people who are in bed, look at the masterpieces she made while in bed painting.
Yeah, I think Armand and yourself were talking about what I think is that we all have this gift within us, you know, that all of us. And what Armand was saying psychologically, I think some people get messages growing up that taking risks, making mistakes, whether it's perfectionism or certain seriousness or somberness, go to med school, go to Wall Street, make money, you know. So being creative, being artistic, making mistakes isn't something encouraged. So it does, I think, can really atrophy inside people, but it's there if they want to tap into it. And I assume trauma as well as major illness is a way for people to just reassess their whole life and challenge all sorts of assumptions about who they are and what's important and take a fresh look. And that's why it becomes a doorway, not a wall.
Exactly. We think, you know, we're up against a wall. We think, what are we going to do? But actually, when you feel you have nothing to lose, you find you have everything to gain. And you find there are strengths within you you never realize. This is called resilience. The word means bouncing back. And it means that we can bounce back from all sorts of difficulties. And creativity is a great tool for resilience because not only is it enjoyable, but you have something to show for it. After you make something, here, you have actually changed the world because there's a piece of your art or a piece of your knitting or a piece of your music or one of your poems that is in the world, and everybody is a poet. I really believe that. Because, as I said before, the unconscious is a poet. We all dream. We are all poetic. I would love it if we all wrote poetry. Wouldn't that be a great world? We
could. Well, how about everybody write us some poetry right here? How about everybody out there, would you do us a favor and write one page of poetry and send it to thepositivemind.com? Send it to us here, and we'll read your poetry on air. Give us one page, or give us, you know, let's select from everybody. You know, just off the top of your head, how do you write poetry? What's the process? You know, you no longer have to rhyme things, right?
That's right. Rhyming has really freed everybody to be a poet very easily. It doesn't even have to be a whole page. Just give a few lines. What do you think about what you're looking at? Look at the sun. Look at a tree. And remember that we're all like trees. When we see a tree, we see the trunk and the beautiful leaves above ground. But there's the equivalent of that tree beneath the ground in the root system. And we have that within us. What we see, you know, they say what you see is what you get. No, we have more than that. We have so much unseen strength. And creativity taps into that unseen strength. It taps into our root system that is spread out far. And as Jungians would say, your root system is actually intertwined with other root systems. So you would be amazed at what you can bring up. And as I say, everybody dreams. The unconscious is a poet. Everybody is a poet. And I look forward to this poetry.
Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. We do want to take a couple of your calls today related to this. We're talking about creativity and transforming illness when walls become doorways. Our guests are Dr. Kent Robert Shaw and Toby Zausner. Dr. Toby Zausner, the name of the book, When Walls Become Doorways. A really fine thing, a nice piece of work. You know, and so it becomes the kind of thing where you know, you find yourself in your painting. You find yourself in your writing. You find, and especially if nobody's looking at it, you know, if nobody is there to criticize it, and it's just for you. Problem that most people do is they start creatively and they want somebody else to hear it. Now, you know, beginning creative violin is pretty tough stuff. I want you to hear me play these notes on a saxophone. Very tough stuff. Don't expect anybody else to get it. I would get no matter what you did because I would get the fact that you put the effort into it. But you don't expect to get the feedback on it. You know, some people do. Who are some of the other people who got these radical illnesses that turned their lives around?
Well, Frank Day was a Native American.
Native American.
Yeah, he was a migrant worker. He was a very poor man, migrant worker, had a terrible farm accident that broke both knees. He ended up in the hospital, and again, in the rehabilitation part of the hospital, what could he do? He started to paint. All of a sudden, he was doing incredible paintings of his Native American heritage. And these paintings are not only gorgeous, but they're a piece of our history. And they're a piece of anthropology. And he went on. Not only did he paint, but he became so excited about Native American heritage that he started choreographing dancing. He could no longer dance himself, but he could teach those whose legs could move how to dance.
I think there's a great example in the book as we're talking about people becoming self-absorbed, and it's the story of Michelangelo that you talk about in the book, which has to do with him getting punched in the nose at 14 and having what seems to be a horribly disfigured nose, and how it seems like that led him to a constant search for beauty rather than, again, people that we treat or I treat that have body dysmorphia who get – you know, trapped in the bondage of self, of how they're not beautiful enough or what about them is not beautiful enough. They have this striving for beauty that gets channeled into their art and into their creativity. It's a beautiful story in your book.
Oh, thank you very much, Kent. Yeah, when he was about 14 years old and drawing with a fellow art student, Torrigiano, they had a fight. Torrigiano punched him in the nose and said, "I could feel the cartilage and bone break under my fist like a biscuit." Well, he must have punched Michelangelo out cold because his biographer, Condivi, says he was brought home as if dead. Michelangelo always thought of his face as ugly after that. If you read his poetry, he said, "Oh, you look at my face, it's the kind of face that has fright. Other people are beautiful." But he took that desire for extreme beauty and perfect beauty and translated it into his work. His work is magnificent. And he also, when he was working on the Sistine Chapel, which we all know, which is a great, great piece, he was twisting and bending for over 4 years. We know that movie where he's lying down and painting.
Lust for Life?
Lust, no. that was Van Gogh.
Oh.
What is the one? Charlton Heston played it. Maybe one of the callers in can tell us. But he actually stood painting that ceiling. And he said, "My body is bending like a Syrian bow and I'm twisting." But his figures on the ceiling start to twist like his body was twisting while painting them. And they become more and more dynamic. And toward the end of the ceiling, they're so big and so strong, they're moving out of their niches. Well, his figures that he painted from physical disorder, you know, disability and pain, changed his art afterwards and most likely brought in the new style of art called mannerism because they copied his twisting figures.
Wow. Toby Zausner, let's take one of our calls. 212-209-2900. Hi, you're on the air. And there might be somebody on the air. We have different engineering today, so we'll give it a shot. 212-209-2900. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Good afternoon, everybody. This is Patty. I think the name of the movie is The Agony and the Ecstasy.
Thank you, Patty.
Thank you, Patty.
Okay, have a great one. Bye-bye.
Bye, thank you. That's a nice contribution.
Thank you very much.
212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand Mill.
212-209-2900.
Hi there. Turn down your radio, please. I think that's
hello.
You have to turn down your radio all the way.
Okay, I got it all the way down.
Okay, hi.
I missed part of the show. I know you're talking about artists and creativity, and I'm an artist and creativity, and I'm experiencing everything you've said. Before I left my studio to go to buy some hardware, I heard you talk about how creative process changes your sense of time during the act itself. So I just called to kind of add something to the conversation without knowing where you're at this point.
Well, what we were talking about earlier today was how creativity gets an opportunity when a person is suddenly receives news of a sudden illness. And we were relating it to illness and how creativity can be unleashed actually at a time of creative, at a time of illness where you may not have experienced it before.
Right. And I did hear you make some reference to depression as well.
Yes.
And I grew up in a very intense and violent and alcoholic household. And maybe that's why I became an artist.
It could be because many, many people who have a place to go to, they want to have a world to go to other than the world they're in.
Yeah.
You know, and music and art suddenly gives you a whole world that you're involved in. It's a friendly family, you know. You and your art are a friendly family.
Yeah,
you make up your own family.
I expressed myself in all those mediums, and I had a sibling who does not. She experiences and remembers her childhood totally different than I do.
Yeah, I hear. I thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hello there. 212-209-2900. We'll take another call. Hi there.
Hello.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Because I'm not on the internet, how else can I get my poem to you?
Oh, you're not on, you could fax it to me.
Oh, fax it?
Can you fax?
Yes. Tell me, fax what?
212-757.
Yes. 757.
3555.
3555.
Are you going to fax it right away?
No, not now.
You're going to create it for us?
I did it already, but then I've got to get to it now. I'm busy.
What's your name?
Thelma Easy.
And tell me, Thelma, when did you write this poem?
Oh, years ago.
And how long is this poem?
It's like four verses. Each verse a line. Each verse four lines.
Uh-huh, good. Say it to me now.
Yeah, you've got to give me some time to review it, man.
Okay, do you have it anywhere handy?
No.
Okay.
No, it's buried. I've got to go take it up.
Okay, well, then you go take it up, and then you send it to us.
All right.
Thank you so much for calling
all
in.
All right, Armand.
Okay,
thank
bye-bye.
Thank you.
212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. That's the way creativity sometimes happens, you know. We've had, can't tell you how many people we've had singing on air, playing music on air, and doing a number of things on air. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Hi, it's Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
How come I don't... You're discussing about artists today?
Yes.
Okay, well, great. I've been an artist for, for 20 years or so. And I'm just... In the last 5 years, I've gotten out of painting, actually... through kind of feeling happy about things. How do I get back to that, you know, that angst, that sorrow that you have in order to paint?
You painted out of your sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And now you don't feel so sorrowful.
No,
so,
but I want to paint.
Well, all right. Let's talk to Toby about it. Toby?
Okay.
You can paint from joy.
Paint from joy. Okay.
Why don't you paint your joy? It's so wonderful to share joy with people. Because when you put your joy on a piece of canvas or on a piece of paper, other people will see it, and they'll resonate with it, and you will actually be sharing your joy through your art.
okay, I'll have to explore the joy then. I mean, I feel joyful, but my painting's always been on the lines of Francis Bacon, you know, expressionist, neo-expressionist. So I guess I will have to explore joy then and now and try to get that going. All right.
You're ready for a transformation in your art.
I guess I'm ready for it, but I guess I'm not ready for it.
You're probably more ready for it than you think because you called in.
That's
and you
true.
Expressed yourself.
You're right.
So
all
I
right.
think this is a pivotal moment for you.
Okay, and I've also gone from painting to writing, and I caught my attention when you said writing, and I've written poetry and a children's little book and, you know, illustrated. So I have been exploring, I guess, through children's work, the lighter side of, you know, kind of art or life through a child's eyes. So in a sense, yeah, I guess you're right. So I'll continue then.
Oh, please share your joy with the children. And remember, many famous artists were writers. Leonardo da Vinci, and I said Munch, many of them. Odillon Redon wrote his life story.
What did Leonardo da Vinci write?
He wrote those fantastic notebooks.
Oh, yes.
All his observations.
Uh-huh. You're right. They all wrote. Vincent van Gogh wrote the letters, even though he didn't know he was writing to be published. But those were beautiful writings.
Yeah, they're excellent. And in different languages. He was fluent in several languages. He was a brilliant man.
Mm-hmm.
So, thank you very much for calling in. Kent, what about you? Are you a writer as well?
Oh, yeah. I've got a muse these days. I'm writing poetry, too. So,
are you really?
It's very exciting, yes.
How about we know about Kent, the piano player, but we don't know about Kent, the poet?
Well, only I'll share some of it on the air someday, some spontaneous
bring it around,
stuff.
Sure. I'd love to hear it. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Armand, this is Tony in Somerset, New Jersey. I'm so happy you took my
Hello,
call.
Hello, Tony. Good. Do you have us on a speakerphone?
I am on a speakerphone, yes. I'm wearing a headset.
Okay.
Only option.
All right. Is there a way out of a speakerphone?
Yes, I'm on a line phone, Armand.
Good. Go ahead. Talk to us.
Talk to us? Are you crazy? From me? I've never felt so creative, yet I'm holding it in. And I get these cycles. This is another day of another cycle, maybe the same cycle, the intensity and the just worn out from the intensity.
So what do you need?
Nothing.
No, it sounds like you need something, Tony.
I need to give. I need to be giving.
And that's an important factor. Giving to whom? Can you add a little more to that? That's just a verb. I need to give.
I need to know I have some positive effect.
So you need to take your creativity and put it out there in the world and get feedback from it so that you know you're having a positive effect, which is different than giving. You need to get is what you're saying. You need to get feedback. So let me make a recommendation to you related to that.
I need you to break my heart.
What?
I require you to break my heart. Thank you.
You require me. There he is. Here comes the heartbreaker. The real issue is, tell me about your brother.
Which one?
Yeah, the one that you're alienated from.
Wow, a long time.
Yeah, how long?
Over 20 years.
How come?
I want to kill him.
Why?
He just got me so, I feel so angry, just so thoughtless enough to just be that violent.
So how can you creatively work at healing that particular relationship? Because you know me, I hear that that's getting in your way. And for as long as you can't fix that, you won't be able to get your work out. So you need to fix it.
Wow. I can only cry from the pain now.
Yeah.
I cry a lot.
From the pain of being alienated from your brother?
Oh, maybe it's that I can cry over the 1979 Pittsburgh Pirates. It's so
sure,
beautiful.
I understand. You're deeply emotional.
Yeah, it's emotional.
Well, take a look at that thing with your brother and see if you're not done with it. See if you're not, because I could hear it, as you know.
You're a beautiful man, Armand.
Yeah, well, thank you for calling in.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure. Well, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to have to be going. I want to thank Dr. Kent Robert Shaw. Dr. Kent Robert Shaw. It's not three words. It's two words. Dr. Kent. No, that's four words. That's three words. Doctor is one, and Kent is two, and then Robert Shaw is one. And I want to thank Toby Zausner, who wrote the book When Walls Become Doorways. Toby, thank you for being with us. Kent, thank you for being with us.
You're most welcome.
Thank you, Armand.
We'll be back with you soon here on WBAI. And let me think. I think there is something. If you want to get a copy of today's program, or you want to hear it again, or direct somebody to it, you can send them to thepositivemind.com.
Sweetheart, the night is growing old.
And here's my message to you.
My love is still untold. A kiss that is never tasted.
So, Armand, that's a wrap?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much, sir.
Right, let this run just about 1 minute.
Yeah, no problem.
All we know, we may never meet again. Before you go, make this moment sweet again. We won't say good night until the last minute.
And that concludes another edition of
Smith.